Okay, today is February 4th, 2016. This is an interview with Charles Holbrow. This interview is being conducted actually via Skype, sort of over the phone, but not really. And my name is Troy Reeves. I'm with the UW-Madison Oral History Program. So Charlie, if you would, for sound quality purposes, could you say your name and then also tell me where you are right now?
All right, so I'm Charles H. Holbrow. I use the middle initial because there's more than one Charles Holbrow. And I am in Cambridge, Massachusetts, actually, at 231 Pearl Street, my residence.
Great. Thank you. And you don't mind if I call you Charlie, is that?
I prefer it.
Okay. Good. All right. So the first question is a question that I hope allows you to talk a little bit about UW and also the Ford Scholars. So it's a pretty broad question, but why UW?
Well, you know, that has to do with why I was in the Ford program at all. It was essentially a decision by my father, who thought, probably correctly, that I was having too much fun in high school, maybe unhealthy fun. But he was reading the New York Times one Sunday and saw an announcement of the Ford program. And as it was being announced, there were only four schools involved. It was UW, it was Chicago, it was Columbia, and it was Yale. And he said, you should try out for this. And that I did. I went and took, I think it was just the general parts of the GREs. I'm not sure, but it was, you know, it was before PSATs. So then the next thing I knew, I was admitted to the program. I was not that eager to go, but my father said it would be good and I should do it. He said, to answer your question, UW is the place for you to go. All the other three schools are essentially city schools, and you're too young to be hanging out in those cities. You know, Madison looked to me like a city too, but that's my father's decision, and I just did it.
So, Charlie, where did you grow up?
Well, I was born in Melrose, and so the first 9 years of my life, I was right here in the Boston area. But my father took a series of jobs after the end of World War II. They took us out to Williamstown, then to Lowell, then back to Williamstown. And then finally, as I was finishing junior high school, eighth grade, to a suburb of Columbus, Ohio, Upper Arlington High School it was. And so I went to Upper Arlington High School for 8, 9, and 10 grades.
Okay. So maybe a couple more things about that. Mm-hmm. Your father thought you were having too much fun. But was it the academics? I mean, how were academics at that high school? Were you?
I was okay. You know, I was always kind of moving ahead in a dreamlike state. I had mixed grades. I got kind of interested in school along about the ninth grade, and my grades got better and better. So by the time I got to the 10th grade, I think I was finishing up with all A's. But that was never, you know, I never thought about it as a passport to anything. I just liked what I did. And when I didn't like what I did, I didn't do very well at it.
Hmm. Okay. So I'm going to assume you hadn't been to Madison before you matriculated here. Is that correct?
That's right. Well, we came up that summer. My father drove me up, and we found me a place to live on North Lake Street, 309 North Lake Street. Mrs. Hungerford was my landlady, and I was paying $4.50 a week rent.
So it sounds like it wasn't so much the house or Dr. Howe that helped you find housing, but your father?
Yeah, I think we just went to the housing office. You know, I got to know Herbert Howe, but he was never a mentor for me to the degree that he was for most of the other Ford students. I mean, I certainly went to his house. I liked the man. He was my freshman advisor and signed my my cards. But he never, it may in fact, you know, I was a teenager, and probably the best way to get me to do something was to tell me not to do it, or maybe in reverse, you know, he wanted the Ford students to go into ILS, And so that about did it for me. I wasn't going to go into ILS. I went off partly because I had intentions to do a science major, and it looked to me like ILS impeded that if you needed to take a lot of math and science. And I needed to take some high school level math because I hadn't done the last 2 years of high school.
Thank you. So do you have any initial impressions from the short trip in the summer to find housing?
I have a very clear image in my head of coming in along Regent Street and seeing Camp Randall Stadium and thinking, that's a big building. But that's about it. And then, of course, the houses in those places was all old three-story multiple-dwelling houses. And our house, but again, you know, it's really, it was kind of a level of unconsciousness of all the thing. You know, you just showed up. And mm-hmm. it was the way it was, and that, okay, and you proceeded.
You know. So the house on Lake Street, did you have a roommate?
I did. It's a kind of a jerk from Beaver Dam, as I remember. I think he flunked out after a semester. You know, we were not exactly compatible roommates, but you know, we didn't fight. I'm trying to remember his name. I can't remember his name anymore. But I think in those days, UW took a certain amount of pride. I think if you had a C average in high school, you could come down to the Madison campus, and then at 6 weeks. If you were a disaster, you just left, you know, and went away. And so there was a large efflux during the semester of kids who had come from inadequately prepared or just didn't want to do the work level that was required, and then they left. And my roommate was one of those, although other people in the house were from Beaver Dam also, and some of them remained good acquaintances for years.
Okay. So you talk about the memory of seeing Camp Randall when you came this summer. What about once you arrived and got settled at that house on Lake Street? Do you have early memories of your
what's my vision? It's hard to remember, but I mean, I loved all kinds of things about it. I mean, just I liked the variety. I liked. I didn't miss a home football game for 4 years. I enjoyed that. Most of my friends were Ford students. Partly, you know, John Israel and Steve Kresge, whose pictures I sent you. They lived across the street. They were on North Lake, and I can't remember her name, but it would come back to me after a while. But they had a nice landlady, and we would all go to the Wisconsin Union. The Union was the center of our social existence, both the cafeteria where, you know, again, you remember the prices, you know, on special Sunday dinners when you were really going to blow a lot of money, you might pay a dollar and a half for your Sunday dinner. Mm. And, mm-hmm. and then, but most of the time I was living under, my parents sent me $25 a week, and that was contingent on that I wrote home. So that was inspirational. Mm-hmm. So I learned to type. That was how I turned that into a productive enterprise. But so we would hang out in the Raskeller, and so I hung out with that group of kids who, the Ford students and many others who were part of ILS, who were in ILS. And, you know, it was a much more residential integrated program in those days. They all were taking courses together.
So even though you weren't in ILS, you were able to build relationships with those Ford scholars who were.
Yeah, that was my social group, really.
Charles, do you have any memories in general about registration? It's such a different...
Yeah, well, of course, you we had IBM cards. I think it was that was a bold innovation in the day. I remember standing in long lines and getting punch cards. I can still remember my UW ID number, and things like I had to take ROTC. That was quite a remarkable feature, and I had to take American history because that was a requirement. I remember registering in the armory, you know, filing in long lines past those tables, sort of flipping with this pack of cards that I don't even remember what we did with them, but they were important, I gather. My fee card was, of course, the tear off end of a IBM card, and that was your passport to all kinds of things.
So when you came here, were you still 15?
I was.
Because off the record, so to speak, you said that you met your wife on your 16th birthday. So I wonder if you wouldn't mind talking a bit about that.
About
meeting your wife.
We enjoy the fact that she was in ILS. You know, she was a farm girl from Cambria, near Cambria, Wisconsin, Partyville, also kind of equidistant between them. And she came down. She was very smart, but just an amazingly pleasant person. And so she was in ILS, and kind of came along with the Ford students who were in ILS and were my friends, partly because they were neighbors, partly because they were just enjoyable people. And so she was present at my birthday party. I can't remember what it consisted of, but in those days, I might have even had a cake from home, because in those days, my mother was still doing my laundry. We had the laundry box, which you mailed home with dirty clothes, and then she would mail it back with clean clothes. That was just on the cusp of the changeover to washing machines available for a quarter. But she would send it back with cookies and cake in it or something like that. So that was a kind of nice feature of those days. And so Mary was present, and we were not dating or anything like that. That didn't really happen for another year or so.
Okay.
But after that, we were an item for the last 2 years of college, and then we got married. She went on, did 1 year of graduate work, got a master's degree in French literature at UW. I had gone to Columbia for several years, but came back in summer of 56, and we were married.
Thank you.
60th anniversary this June.
Well, congratulations.
Well, good.
Well, congratulations in advance, let's say.
Okay, yeah, we knock on
wood. I don't want to jinx it. So, yeah, right. I'm knocking on my big wood table, too.
All right.
So you already talked about the fact you didn't join ILS, but what major did you decide to pursue then?
Well, I had, as a kid, I had gotten quite interested in physics without any concept whatsoever of what it was about, because in high school, in the ninth grade, you could take physical science, and and then there was stuff about levers and pulleys, and but I didn't take that. I don't know why. Anyway, I ended up at UW. I still had to finish high school algebra, take some trigonometry. I had to, as a kid, I had always a source of income. I always had a paper route, and in those days, kids could make, seemed to me like, decent money delivering papers. So I had enough money to indulge curious interest, and somehow at some point I got a book by Robert Millikan called Photons, Protons, Electrons, Mesons, and Cosmic Rays, some permutation of those words. And it didn't make any sense to me at all. But I thought, this is pretty neat stuff. I'm going to be a physics major. So I went to UW thinking I was going to do science anyway. So my freshman year, I took a chemistry course. I took an algebra course, which today they wouldn't give you credit for. But in those days, they still did, because it was clearly, you know, what do they call it, rehabilitation? No.
Yeah.
So it was not college level stuff, but I got credit for it, and I continued on that line until, well, so I didn't take any physics until my sophomore year, and then I took physics 31A and 31B from Rolofson, and I don't know, I kind of sleepwalked through it. I really just didn't have a clue what it was about, but you know, like most board students, I have certain gift for doing exams when I don't know what the hell is going on, and that certainly worked for me. That is to say, I think I got B's in the physics course, and then I took first semester of my junior year, I took optics from Jack Fry, and I was, and that was a depressing experience. I was working, well, as I say, I had mediocre grades, you know. Yes, let me back up. One of the memorable things about Wisconsin was my freshman year, I had a 7:45 class Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. And it was an English class, and we had to write an essay every week. And I know that towards the end of that thing, I would stay up Friday night, write the essay, go up Bascom Hill, lay the essay on the teacher's desk, you know, around 6:30 in the morning, and then I'd go home and go to bed. I got a C in that English course. That I didn't feel was undeserved. But coming back then, a couple of years later with Jack Fry and the optics course, I got a C. But I never worked so damned hard in my life to get a C, and that changed my attitude. And I was facing, what was I going to take the second semester of my junior year? I was going to take quantitative analysis. I was going to take heat and thermodynamics. I was taking calculus. I was taking a Russian course, and that was just such a depressing moment in my life that I became a history major, and became a history major partly because, thanks to Wisconsin's requirements, I had history. You had to have American history 4A and 4B, taught by Fred Harvey Harrington and Green, as I remember. Anyway, I had enough history courses already under my belt for no particular good reason, so that I could still get a history major and graduate at the end of my senior year. So that's when I became a history major.
So just to confirm then, halfway through your junior year, you switch. So did you scrap all the courses you were going to take that second semester junior year?
Well, I didn't scrap the math course, which is why I was ultimately able to go back and be a physicist. I kept the calculus course, but I scrapped the other three courses, and I think probably took history courses. I don't know. I took a lot of history courses in the next three semesters, and they were great. I really loved it.
So those last couple of years, who are you taking history classes from?
Post, teaching medieval history. Petrovich, teaching Russian intellectual history. And I was taking, as I say, I think Green was what I had. I had Harrington earlier, like a year or two earlier. Oh, and I took a course from Edson, who was ancient history. I had, when I was a freshman, my second semester as a freshman, I had taken history 10B. And so then there I was, a junior or maybe a senior. I took history 10A. Anyway, he was great. I did like them all.
So to switch gears here a little bit then, we've talked about, in general, sort of memorable classes. You just mentioned some professors. you've mentioned a couple of the Ford scholars, John and Kresge, and then of course you talked about your wife. But are there other students that you built relationships with during your undergrad?
Oh yeah, I mean Tom Hartshorn, another Ford student, Marv Chapman, who came from Milwaukee. I think he was probably our only African American. Maybe there was another one. And you know, there was a kind of, left wing coterie that hung around in the Rathskeller. One of the things that was an eye opener for me was sort of meeting New York kids. And they were mostly Jewish, and they were great. We were just wonderful friends, and then we would often at Christmas break or something like that, we would congregate in New York City, do something together, and that was a pleasure. Well, Hillel Gershenson was a Ford student. He, Dave Stanley, is a lifelong friend, another Ford student. Paul Friedman was the next year. And we were in the entry of 51. Paul Friedman came in 52. Year we did. Dave Stanley didn't graduate. I think he never graduated from UW. Yeah, I think he just transferred out to Columbia Law School. And but I see him, you know, maybe twice a year even yet. Paul Friedman, Dave Stanley, Andy Ferber, and Hillel Gershenson and I all at various times roomed together. We had an apartment, 22 North Butler Street, just off the square. I think I mentioned somewhere that it was a building designed by Frank Lloyd Wright and then disowned by him after somebody reconfigured the upper deck. But we lived in that building in undergraduate squalor.
So is Lake Street and the Frank Lloyd Wright house the only two places that you lived?
No, I can't probably fish up everything. I lived in Lake Street my freshman year. The next year, I lived the fall term with John, with John Israel. He and I roomed together on a little side street alley in that same area, but I don't remember its name. And then in the spring, I moved to St. James Place on the other side of Regent Street, I think. There's a next to a Catholic church and parochial school. And I had a single room there because Hillel and Steve Kresge were in the adjacent room in that place. And then that summer, that's my sophomore year. So the summer of my junior, summer between my sophomore and junior years, Dave Stanley and I moved into 22 North Butler Street where we lived for 3-4 months with a guy named Angelo Curti, who had possession of the apartment and was looking for roommates for a couple of months. But then he moved out and we took over. Andy Ferber moved in. Andy, I think, is now a psychiatrist in Florida, I guess, the last I saw. Anyway, he was a very interesting guy, repulsive in many ways, to the point where we threw him out apartment after some months of living together. And then Paul, then Hillel moved in, and then Paul moved in. So Hillel and Paul and I lived there our senior year. So 22 North Butler Street, probably the place I lived the longest.
Okay. Charlie, just to let you know, it's not too bad, but there's an occasional glitch.
Yeah, I've had a couple from you.
So, but I think we're still getting the gist of, even in the glitches, the gist of what's being said. Okay, so you've talked about your living spaces. You've talked about the union, particularly the Rat, the Rathskeller. I wonder if there are other favorite spaces or memorable spaces or places for you, either on campus or off campus?
I have sort of episodes. We were all well below the drinking age, but we would occasionally go out to the intramural fields and drink on the intramural fields. Boating on Lake Mendota was just great. We loved to do that, go to the Hoofers and the Boathouse were different those days. We would rent canoes from the Boathouse, canoe along the banks, go out, get in trouble, at one time I remember we took a boat through the Yahara Locks into Lake Monona, took a canoe. That was one of the things that was really enjoyable. Other sort of places, by the time we were juniors or seniors, we had friends who were living in apartments in different places. We visit there, but I don't remember. There was a group of people who lived on South Park Street. I have vague recollections of, so it couldn't have been when I was a senior, because I think these were guys coming in from Chicago to agitate against American participation in the Korean War. And I think they were pretty clearly identified as coming from communist front groups in Chicago.
So, besides these apartments and the houses you lived in, it doesn't sound like there's other off-campus spaces that are coming to mind as places where you...
I think that's fair to... Correct.
Okay. So that glitch there, so just to confirm, besides these apartments, houses, most of your memories of those other places are places that are on campus.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, of course, when I'm living on North Butler Street, I'm going up and down State Street every day. So State Street is a major feature in my daily existence.
Was it still were there still car traffic on State Street at that point?
Oh yes. Yeah, for many years.
Something I haven't asked the others, it just came to mind. So you were in the first cohort of Ford Scholars, and you've already mentioned at least once that you got to know Ford Scholars who came in after you.
Right.
Was there any, I'll say, official mentoring or of when the new Ford Scholars would come in that the old Ford Scholars might provide some assistance?
I don't remember that, and it may just be because I was not in the ILS contingent. And indeed, I would occasionally go to evenings at Howe's, but I don't ever remember it as frequent. And it may be that he did something with the ILS contingent to be sure that they helped out the new ones. But I my basic answer is I didn't have much to do with such a thing.
So, not to put words in your mouth, but it sounds like then if you would get to know the new Ford Scholars, not necessarily by happenstance, but just by hanging out, if they happen to be hanging out with a group
I would get to know them because they would come and hang out in the Rascaler like the rest of us.
Okay. You talked about going to every home football game. Were there other athletic events that you attended?
No, I don't think I ever went to another athletic event, though. Not that I can remember.
Okay. What about other, I guess I would call them rituals, like dances, homecoming, so events sponsored by UW?
Well, let's see. So I certainly went to dances in Great Hall. I think I'm sure I'm not saying anything new to you, but one of the major concerns we had as Ford students was girls. You know, I guess we more or less lied about our age, although in the end I didn't think it made much difference. I had a girlfriend almost at once, and and we went to dances, but I think I met her at a dance. So, it was a fixation to be able to find a girlfriend, and we all sat among ourselves. And the first year, of course, we were all males. There were not any Ford girls. I'm not even sure there were any in the second year. I think maybe it was the third year where they started to have some girls. I went to dances. I never went to anything like Mill Ball or proms. Or, you know, nothing with a big dress-up cost.
Okay. What about homecoming activities? You recall any being a part of any of those?
No, I don't. Maybe this is a digression, but I did pledge a fraternity my freshman year. I came from a high school in Columbus suburbs that had fraternities, and so I was sort of thought I was expected to pledge a fraternity, and I pledged Deke and went through part of the pledge procedure and found it pretty disgusting. And when the pledge master upbraided us on Monday mornings for not having drunk enough on the weekends, I finally just faded away, depledged, and went back about my business.
Okay. Charlie, was religion or church a part of your life while you were here?
I would occasionally go to the Episcopal Church, chapel that we're on University Avenue. I think there was some social things there, and I was exploring those, but it was never a big deal.
Was it a big deal growing up?
No. Well, I mean, it used to tick me off that my father would take me to Sunday school and drop me off, and he'd go home and read the funny papers. Mm-hmm. I felt there was a deep injustice there.
What about involvement in campus clubs or publications?
I just gave you the Deke, the fraternity non-involvement. I wrote a few things for the Cardinal, the Daily Cardinal. So I was aware of that, you know. I was not involved anything like John Israel was, but I was active in the Joe Must Go movement. I was out writing, soliciting signatures on the recall petitions. There was an organization called the Green Feather Organization, and I can't remember the details anymore. I think I was secretary of it or something like that. I don't even. It has some vaguely communist front aura in my recollection, and we were a cabal within it to just make it go away. That was so.
So you were a part of it, but you didn't want it to continue?
Yeah.
Okay. I wonder, because we don't know who will listen to this and in what context, if you could talk a little bit more about Joe Must Go.
What can I say? I mean, I was not, I don't think of myself as a particularly politically sensitive person, but I always thought him that he was repulsive in the extreme in his kind of hectoring use of lies to blacken people's reputations. It was a kind of teenage reaction, not based on any ideology. I thought this is a disgusting person, ought not to be a senator. And, you know, now I've seen 60 years. I've seen a lot of guys like that be senators, so it's not so clear. But at the time, the Joe Must Go movement organized on campus. So I guess I would have had kind of left-wing instincts, which is odd because I come out of a very Republican set of family traditions. And but I remember stuffing envelopes at the Progressive magazine, doing some things like that, and putting up posters. I don't think I can't remember that I ever went door to door like some kids did, but I do remember going up. Jeez, I'm blanking now. Leroy Gore was the editor of the Sauk City paper, was I think one of the instigators of the Joe Must Go movement, because I remember going up, I think it is to Sauk. Is there a Sauk City in Wisconsin?
Yes, there's a Sauk City. It's by Baraboo and
right. Purdue, so it's on the river, because I remember going up and somehow or other we ended up waiting in the river there. But that was, and that must have had something to do with the fact that he was the editor of the paper, the Sauk City something or other.
Okay.
Long time ago.
So I'm now down to sort of the questions on the bottom, which start off with, you know, when did you leave UW and why?
Well, I graduated in 1955, and by that time I'd become a history major. And again, sort of driven by serendipity, it's the end of my junior year. I decided that I could get a Bachelor of Arts in history, and that would be better than a Bachelor of Science in history. And the only difference at UW then was that Bachelor of Science had not met any language requirement. But if I got a decent language under my belt, I could graduate with a Bachelor of Arts. And by that time I was spending my summers in Madison. I was working that summer I worked as a bellhop in the Edgewater Hotel. I looked around for what I could take in the way of languages, and what I could take that would get me a whole lot of language real fast was Russian, summer course, 5 days a week for 8 weeks, and it was two semesters of Russian in a summer, taught by Edmund Zavatsky, out of the Slavic language, and somehow or other with the Russian under my belt. And I don't know, maybe Petrovich's course may have influenced me, but it was Cold War days, and the Ford Foundation had discovered, along with everybody else, that the country didn't know squat about the Soviet Union, and they were proposing fellowships. So I applied for one. I got it to go to Columbia or Harvard. I got admitted both to Harvard's Russian Studies program and to Columbia's Russian Studies program. One of my less wise decisions, I went to Columbia because Phil Mosley was said to be the leading scholar in the field, and I thought, oh, go where the Columbia, and he went out the door as I came in because I didn't know about revolving doors at large universities. He went off to Washington for 3 years to do something or other. I was unhappy with the experience. Actually, the people I worked with in the Russian Institute were very decent, but I thought Columbia mistreated its graduate students mammothly and have never forgiven them. Mary was staying at Wisconsin. She was getting her master's in French literature. I was at Columbia in the Russian Institute and also studying Russian, East European history. We got married June after we had graduated from UW. And we moved to, she moved, came, we lived together in Dave Stanley's apartment, actually. He had finished Columbia Law School, and we took his apartment. And then I got, it was kind of weird in a way. Every time I asked the Ford Foundation for money, they gave me about 50% more than I asked for. But we had a baby. So 1957, yeah, 57. Gwen was born in 57. We're living in New York City, and I was getting depressed from studying history, sitting in the library reading a book a day or exams. And I took my exams. I passed, but already before I had gone very far, I was sneaking off to take advanced calculus. And I notice I still do that. If I do anything verbal for very long, I have to go take some math, just clear my head. And we had this child, and the child was beginning to crawl around on the curbstones of Riverside Drive and snarfle cigarette butts, and we were thinking, let's get the hell out of here. But what really did it for me was in October of 57, of course, Sputnik went up. Now, I had already been sneaking off to math classes, but instead of working on my preparing for my exams. But I thought, all right, I'm going to do something. I'm going to go back and do science. What I was thinking was, I got to go put my hands on something material. All this verbal stuff drives me nuts. And I'm going to do engineering. So I came back to UW. I made a trip to UW, and I went down to the engineering campus, and they said, basically, well, if you work really hard for 3 years, you can get a bachelor's degree in engineering. Then I went over to the physics department, and Heinz Barschall happened to be chair. I actually knew Heinz Barschall a little because he had been my lab instructor in Physics 31A. And I don't know, he ought to have remembered me because I was the student who spilled mercury all over the floor, and he had to help me clean it up. I went and talked to him, and it became clear that if I worked really hard, then 4 years I could have a PhD in physics. And so I thought, all right, I can figure that out. And it seemed more interesting anyway. And I went home, and I combed through the catalog, the Wisconsin catalog, read it very closely, and found that they had a category of admission for graduate school called probationary admission. Well, I only had 3 semesters of physics. One of them was that C in optics. And so I wrote a very tightly reasoned essay about how I ought to qualify under the probationary admission and so on and so on, sent it in. Then in the end, they just admitted me to graduate school. I came in as a full-time graduate student. What I couldn't do, of course, was with only 3 semesters of physics, I could not be a TA. And so there was a problem of money, and the taps had not yet been opened. After Sputnik, money flowed very bountifully, but it took a while. And so I was coming in, my wife and our baby, actually my pregnant wife, pregnant with our second child, and I came and lived on Seymour Street in a house which is now obliterated by one of the soulless architectural structures of the UW by overlooking the Milwaukee Road railroad tracks. It's great. And I had to work, I worked at Mott's Paint, cleaning paint mills. Don't ever do that. I did it for a while. But then I got this fabulous job with USAFI, United States Armed Forces Institute. I came back that summer. I took differential equations And then I went to the math department, who hired graders for UCSAFI. They said, after they reviewed my mathematics, you know, I had 3 semesters of calculus and I had differential equations. And they said, well, we like to have a little more mathematics than that. So we're going to give you beginning arithmetic to grade. And so this was the Army's Correspondence School. And I remember first lesson, what number comes immediately after 29? What number comes immediately before 29? If you go into the post office and give the man a nickel to buy a 3-cent stamp, how much change will he give you? Now, I could handle this. I was okay with that. And so I had this job, and you got 50 cents a paper graded. It was probably the highest paying job for somebody in my category in Madison in the day. You know, minimum wage was somewhere around $1.25, $1.50, something like that. And then I was getting, I could make $5 an hour grading for USAFI. So that paid the rent for the first year. And then the next year I got fellowships and stuff like that. I worked out at Mura. Well, there I'm running on. You know. And so this is how I got back to Madison.
Mm-hmm. Charlie, I'm at a point, it's still a bit shy of an hour, but there's some things I'd forgotten that you came back here to graduate school, and there's some things I would like to ask about that.
Go ahead.
So maybe we do that for a bit.
I've got us scheduled until 1 o'clock.
But yeah. I had us for, well, anyway.
Go ahead.
So you came back to graduate school in physics.
Yeah.
You're living on Seymour Street.
Right.
So what, if you've reflected upon it, the difference between being in Madison as an undergrad and a teenage undergrad, and then coming back as a married grad student.
No, I mean, it was, well, I never went to another football game the whole time I was in graduate school. I guess not very introspective about it. I was back. Well, I certainly remember. The big question in my mind was, can I do this? And that was. So I'm sitting in a tiny little house on Seymour Street with a wife and 2 children, and we had 2 more before we left. It's a big moment in my life because I remember it very clearly. I was taking classical mechanics from Keith Simon. He wrote the book, and he came into class and said, I don't know what to tell you, I wrote it all in the book. Staring at the wall, thinking my way through a modestly complicated physics problem, and realizing when I got to the end of it that I was actually in control of my thought processes about that problem, that I could, by God, do this. And it was a wonderful moment. After that, I really loved physics. I still love physics. I'm glad I did what I did. I still like history. I write some, but physics has been a joy. And so your life as a graduate student in a physics department is, at least mine, was fully centered on that. I could have been anywhere in the world. I had no particular sense of being at UW. I was with a group of physics professors who were terrific in many respects. Barshall, I mentioned him. He became my thesis advisor. I went to him partly because he had an outstanding reputation of getting his students out fairly quickly. And I thought that would be a good idea. And it was great. And then, of course, you're bonding with your fellow graduate students. They're, they're starting to disappear one by one these days, and each one is a little bit of a wrench to lose them. But we had a reunion of Barshall students last April. We were all in Madison for that. So that was a much more kind of intense experience. where the institutional framework is not so obvious as it was when I was an undergraduate.
It also, I'm assuming, puts you at a different part of campus, physically at a different part of campus, too.
Well, I mean, I was in Sterling Hall. You know, everything was in Sterling Hall. The accelerator was there, and the classes were there. So whereas when you're taking courses, basically it moves me from Bascom Hall down hill. There, the history lectures were all in Bascom Hall. They hadn't built Van Vleck or any of that stuff.
So did you finish in the 4 years that Barshall said?
He would have never said such a thing, but I did finish in 4 years. My official degree is awarded in January of 63, but I was done. My thesis was in and accepted in the summer of 62, and I went off to take my first job teaching at Haverford College in Haverford, Pennsylvania.
So you talked about coming back for a reunion of Barshall students, but after you left in 60, it sounds like you left in 62.
Yeah.
How often did you come back, or did you come back?
Oh, often. My wife was a Wisconsin girl. And so we would come almost every summer. We'd bring her parents had a farm. We would come almost every summer with the children and visit the farm and always come down to Madison. Still. There was a kind of bleak period when Madison got bombed out after, you know, after the bombing. And, you know, I remember coming down State Street and seeing all the boarded up windows. And that was a time when I actually had some influence on where my undergraduates were going, and I would not send them to Madison in those days. But after a while, everything calmed down.
So, since you mentioned the bombing, you know, obviously it happened in Sterling Hall, a building that you were familiar with, even though it happened, you know, a decade or decade plus after you were there. I wonder, do you have memories of what you thought when you heard that the building was bombed?
Well, that bomb went off outside the window of my office. I had the graduate student that had killed Bob Fasnacht, I knew him well. We were graduate students together. Fasnacht had stayed on. And the other students who were wounded were Barshall students. They happened to be running on the accelerator that night. Well, so... yeah, I mean, I had bad feelings about it. I don't know that it filled me with rage. One of the things that happened was, of course, by this time I'm sort of integrated into the nuclear physics community. I got my PhD in nuclear physics under Barshall, so Hugh Richards is appearing at a conference in Texas that fall, and with a slideshow of the damage and a story of what they are doing to get the accelerator back up and running again. And so there was a kind of a technical interest in what was going on, and then it had consequences because Barshall was always very solicitous of his students. You could get on his wrong side and it would be bad for your career. But I never did that, and he was very good to me. But it, of course, enormously reshaped his career. He was prepared to leave Wisconsin and never come back. He went off to Livermore contacts and stayed there several years. And then when he did come back, he was in nuclear engineering rather than in physics. We were told this was because after the bombing, the then chair of physics, who was on vacation somewhere said, well, he wasn't going to come back because he couldn't do anything. Well, this was a philosophical error, I think, as far as Bartrell was concerned. He just was completely bummed by the department and pulled back from it. And if it hadn't been for Willie Heberle, who worked really hard to keep Barshall associated with the department, I think Barshall would have left forever. But he did come back. You ask if I would, came back often. Well, every summer we would come back, and every summer I would go down to Madison and I would look up Heights, and we would talk and see what was going on. Of course, after Heights became the focal point of the famous lawsuit with, I've forgotten the publisher, but I would stop in and I'd get a briefing from Heinz about how that lawsuit was progressing. So no, I was in close contact. I still stop in. I still have people I know in the physics department. They're not even all emeritus yet, which is a miracle.
So how did you keep in touch, or did you keep in touch with some of the Ford scholars that you mentioned previously?
Well, of course, we've had this was our second reunion last October. Wait a minute, in October. That was the second reunion. We'd had one 10 years earlier. But as we travel around the country, we were in San Diego, we'd stop in and see Paul Friedman, or anytime we were in Minneapolis, I'd stop and see Hillel Gershenson and his wife. They would see us if they were in our neighborhood. He was at Cornell for a while. Dave Stanley, we've always stayed in email contact with and visited his family. They had many children, roughly the ages of our many, kind of normal, sociable interactions. Nothing. Remember, yeah, we just never lost touch.
Well, and that's technology-wise, it was a little harder, I would assume anyway, to keep in touch with people in the 50s, 60s, 70s than it would be for people graduating today or even 5 or 10 years ago.
Well, we were not above writing letters. Let's see, and I'm trying to think. Herbert Howe would send out a Christmas letter kind of telling where everybody was. I don't remember using it. But
were you involved in the effort that eventually got a Howe, I don't know if it's a professorship, I don't know the exact title of it, but some of the Ford scholars sort of combined forces to create something like that?
That was Earl Dolvin, who was the ringleader of that, and I made a small donation. I remember running into Herbert Howe. In fact, one of my favorite stories is, I digress, but I'm going to tell it to you anyway. When I was at Haverford, I had good friends there, and one of them, a Harvard historian, would always talk about how wonderful it was to be in a small place like Haverford because you got to know your teachers and all this kind of stuff. And I would say, I got to know my teachers well enough in Wisconsin. And he would poo-poo it. Well, as one summer, I was in Madison, and my friend from Haverford came through on a trip with his family, and he and I, just the friend and I, sat in the Wisconsin Union in the cafeteria, eating and chatting, and Herbert Howe walked over and said, "How are you doing?" And I did the big hello, and we chatted a little bit. And, so what is this? I'm now in my 30s, and the guy walks away, and my friend says, "Who is that?" And I say, "Oh, that's my freshman advisor." And years later, I'm walking at the, I'm up on the square, walking around the square, and there's Herbert Howe walking around the square. And so it was always good to see him. And then he and Evelyn moved into the the assisted living home up on the corner of the square. It's now Capitol Lakes. I don't know what it was, but it had a different name back then. And I've had that firmly in mind ever since, because I think I consider Capitol Lakes as one of the places that my wife and I might like to settle, just as we become more and more debilitated with age. It's a thought. So let's see. No, I did digress.
Part of this, you know, part of what we wanted to get was memories of Hal. So we have a, I know you have a scheduled for another hour. I actually only have about another 15 minutes.
That's fine.
But I do want to do a little bit of picture association here, since you did send me some pictures.
Sure.
And since we're doing this in video, we're not recording video, but I can show you the picture and you can sort of remind me of the caption that you gave. So I don't know if you can see this one.
Well, that's me in my ROTC uniform. So that's my freshman year. And that's actually early in the fall because, as I think I mentioned, that's an Army uniform. And I was in the Air Force ROTC. Mm. But they didn't have the blue uniforms yet. They were very uncomfortable putting us in Army uniforms, but we had to be in uniform. And the reason I was in Air Force ROTC is because you were asking about registration. When I came in, there were two places to register, one for Army ROTC, and there was a huge long line, and one for Air Force ROTC, and there was no long line. And I thought, well, okay, that's clear, and went and stood in the short line. Turned out to have a very nice side benefit, which was that the Army guys all had to carry rifles as they drilled. We did a certain amount of drill, but the Air Force guys did not carry rifles when they drilled. And, you know, drilling without a rifle is a lot easier than drilling with a rifle. It was a nice outcome.
All right, so that is...
But I always look at that and I think, oh boy, our boys in uniform. And,
right. And so this is just the same.
Yeah.
Just probably same day.
Same
pretty
day.
Pretty much same location.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
There in October. Ah, now that's John Israel. And, of course, mugging, as I say.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you've met John, so you know that.
Yes.
You're going to get some of that.
So then is this John too then?
Yes, that's John not mugging.
Yep. So I wonder, it looks like he has the blanket on his, I'm guessing these pictures were probably taken around the same.
They would have been taken exactly the same time. One of the things I did as a teenager with my newspaper route money was buy an Argus C3, and I took a lot of pictures in high school and in college for a while. And
I don't know about the Argus C3. Was that a pretty high-end camera for the day?
It was a 35-millimeter camera. It was American-made. Yeah, it was. Almost a commodity. It became a commodity 35-millimeter camera. But I remember saving up for it.
All right, so now we have.
Well, that's
one.
Steve Kresge. And he's probably out in front of the house in which he and John Israel lived. Harkness, yeah, Mrs. Harkness was their landlady.
Harkness?
Harkness, Harkness.
Okay. And this, was this the house on Lake Street that was across from?
Yeah. Yeah, so okay. I was in 309 and they were over there. In fact, I've seen, I think John has mentioned the address for that. So, well, now that's graduation. And so that's me. Left, from my left to right. I guess it's the same for you. That's Paul Friedman, Mary, Ross, me, and Hillel Gershenson. The three boys are all Ford students.
And your graduation?
Yes.
Okay.
All four of us are graduating.
Oh, okay.
let me see. Hang on a second. I'll show you another picture. See, I don't know how these come through for you, but of course, here's this one.
Okay.
That's the one you just showed me.
Mm-hmm.
But here's a different one. Is that?
Yep. Okay, I got it.
Okay, that's got the parents.
Okay.
See, that is graduation. And let's see. So, again, left to right. Me, Mary, and then that's Hillel's father, Hillel's mother, I can't read my own picture very well. I'm not sure this does you any good, but it's so left to right, it's me, and then I think it's Paul Friedman, and then Mary, and then in front, Hillel's father and mother, and in back is my father, and my mother is just cut off at the edge.
All right. So, Charlie, do you happen to have that one scanned, or has that one ever been scanned?
No, that one's never been scanned.
Okay.
And neither have these. I mean, here's another one, which is just the three of us.
Okay. So I'll take in that graduation time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, these are actually.
All right. Well, then let me show you the two. I think you just had two more that you sent to me. So there's this one.
Yeah, Steve Kresge in Harkness's house in their room.
So a lot of these scan pictures are taken, a couple taken each around the same time, probably.
Right. I mean, I think there are two. Well.
So the Israel pictures probably go along with this picture.
That's right.
Because the door frame is the same.
That's right. It's in their room together.
Okay. And then the last one actually is a contemporary-ish picture.
Yeah, that's 10 years ago. That's at the previous reunion. That's Hillel on the left and Paul Friedman on the right.
And that's at the 2005...
Right.
Reunion.
Right. I'm pretty sure. We may have met again since then. You know, I could check that one. I have.
Mm-hmm. But you've at least met in 2005 and then last October.
Yeah.
Although it sounds like there were some people just unable to make the one in October.
Well, I mean, both Paul Friedman and Hillel are now in assisted living situations. They're some case of dementia in the case of Hillel, and certainly a set of mini strokes for Paul Friedman have left him requiring.
Okay.
Requiring assistance.
So, Charlie, my final question, and then I'll give you some space if you have some final thoughts. What do you think coming to college at such an early age did or didn't do for you?
Yeah. Well, you know, I've seen, have you read the study that was done by a graduate student, I think, at Chicago? She interviewed a bunch of us, and I'll send you the reference.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah. And I was very surprised at how much negative stuff she got from talking to people whom I didn't know very well as Ford students, but it was hard in one sense. You know, I remember, you know, I got to be a sophomore. I remember I was depressed and down, but I never attributed it to being in college. I just attributed it to being 17 or something. And yet, I look back on it. It was a wonderful experience for me, I have to say, you know, it was kind of coerced into it by my father, and I've been back to meet that high school class that I never graduated with because I left 2 years early, and my God, the death rate among those people from I don't know what, but was way above actuarial norms. And I came away thinking, you know, my father really forced me into a way of life that I found enormously satisfying. And I'm grateful to him. You know, he would be amazed to hear me say such a thing. But I really felt, you know, there are all kinds of points in your life where you make major decisions, and they will completely change your life, but they won't make it worse or they won't make it better. They'll just make it different. And this is certainly to an important extent in that category, but I think it made it better for me. You know, I go back to my affluent suburb of Columbus, Ohio, and it's kind of like going into a time machine. You just find a parochialism, an intellectual parochialism that I was forced out of, really, and I'm grateful.
Charlie, do you have anything else you want to say?
Well, you see, that's the point I've been making. I just kind of wander through life, not thinking about it too much. I like to make up stories after it's happened, but what it all means, I haven't got a clue. It's been very good. Well, you know, I do have to say that of all the things that happened to me at Wisconsin, the absolutely central one to my life is having met my wife. I mean, that has just been an amazing outcome for me. I mean, I fell in love at 16 or 17, you know, and never fell out. Just been fabulous.
Well, I think that's probably an appropriate place to end. Charlie, right. I'm going to turn off the recording, then I want to chat with you for a second. So this concludes the oral history with Charlie Holbrow. Charlie, thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Okay.